Whether you're looking for a young person to lead your youth program or you're searching for a pastor to preach every Sunday, there's one major factor that sets contenders apart. By virtue of experience, training, and gifting, is that person qualified to lead? Well, today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll expounds on this dynamic in our continuing study through the New Testament book of Titus. In this message, we'll come to understand that good spiritual leadership requires being qualified. Chuck titled his message, Looking for a Few Good Men.
We'll be continuing in our study of the letter to Titus. If you have not yet found that letter in your New Testament, please turn. Follow along as I read for you from the first chapter, beginning at verse 5, Titus 1:5. For this reason I left you in Crete, that you would set in order what remains and appoint elders in every city as I directed you. Namely, if any man is above reproach, the husband of one wife, having children who believe, not accused of dissipation or rebellion. For the overseer must be above reproach as God's steward, not self-willed, not quick-tempered, not addicted to wine, not pugnacious, not fond of sordid gain, but hospitable, loving what is good, sensible, just, devout, self-controlled, holding fast the faithful word, which is in accordance with the teaching, so that he will be able both to exhort in sound doctrine and to refute those who contradict.
You're listening to Insight for Living. Did you know about the spiral-bound workbooks for our Searching the Scriptures Bible studies? To dig deeper into the New Testament letter of Titus, you can purchase a printed Bible study workbook by going to insight.org/workbooks. And now the message from Chuck called Looking for a Few Good Men.
The worst moment was when we realized the pilot had no idea what to do next. So writes British author and pastor Tom Wright, as he with passengers were flying over South Africa. His true and frightening story continues. We were traveling in a light aircraft going north from Pretoria in South Africa into Zimbabwe. There were five of us in the plane, the pilot, our two hosts, my wife, and myself. There had been some mechanical problems earlier on, but they had been fixed, or so we thought, before we left Pretoria. Now we were flying north. We crossed the Limpopo and found ourselves over open bushland, on and on for miles. But the plane's electrical systems had started to fail. We lost radio contact. The automatic direction finder stopped working. Even the petrol gauge packed up. All that was working was the engine itself, without any landmarks anywhere. We were lost. Only the sun told us roughly which direction we were going in, not how far we'd come. With side winds strong, we couldn't tell whether we were drifting east or overcorrecting. Either way, we might miss our destination, Salisbury, by a long way. We might not have realized how serious the situation was if the pilot had not turned round to talk to us. He was biting his nails, a bad sign. He explained the position, or rather the lack of it. He had no idea where we were. And in any case, there weren't any airports in the region where we could come down and get the plane fixed or even stay the night. He handed the map back to us with an air of desperation. Well, he said, you see, if you can figure out where we are. We couldn't. We reached Salisbury more by providence than skill. After several hours, we crossed a road and flew down to read the road signs. Fortunately, it was still daylight. I learned an important lesson that day. When the pilot can't figure out what's going on, the whole plane is in trouble. A person not technically qualified to pilot an airplane has no business risking the lives of others. Unfortunately, if you've ever been in a situation similar to that, you realize you don't find out until it's too late, and then you're helpless to do anything about it. What happens in an airplane can happen in a church. A person not spiritually qualified has no business hurting the lives of others. Tragedy is, you often find out too late that he's not qualified, and you're at that moment virtually helpless to do anything about it. All of this brings me to a principle of only 6 words, but I hope for the rest of your life you'll never forget them. Good spiritual leadership requires being qualified. Again, good spiritual leadership requires being qualified. It isn't enough just to be sincere. It isn't enough just to be zealous or concerned for the lost. It isn't enough just to have some gifts or training or education. There must be character qualities in place, blended with a measure of maturity, or you have no business leading a church. Good spiritual leadership requires being qualified. That 6-word principle is woven through the fabric of the 5 verses we're looking at today, here in the core of the first chapter of the letter to Titus. The background is easy to remember. Some of the Cretans, those who were natives of the island, were in Jerusalem when Peter preached his great sermon the day of Pentecost. Some of them were born again, and they returned to their island of birth, where they would establish churches, some of them not qualified to do that. I'm sure all of them sincere, wanting the best, but not able to really lead a flock. Not long after that, the apostle himself, along with Titus as a companion, visits the island, and they're involved in evangelism. Realizing that there was much yet to be done, but knowing that his schedule required him to get on up to Nicopolis along the western shores of Macedonia, Paul left Titus there on the island. They must have talked it over late into the night, because at the end of verse 5, we read that Paul refers to his directing Titus already and the reason he left him there. What were the reasons? The main reasons are set forth in verse 5. For this reason, I left you on Crete, 1, that you would set in order what remains, and 2, appoint elders in every city as I directed you. Let's take them one at a time. Always when you read your Bible, pay attention to the main verb. The action of the passage revolves around that verb most often. In this case, it is set in order. Ortho, O-R-T-H-O-O, is the Greek word, and I give you that only because you'll detect it in the root of orthodontics and orthopedics. It means to make straight. The orthodontics makes the teeth straight. The orthodontist makes the teeth straight. The orthopedic surgeon works on bones that have been broken to get them straight again. But in this case, what we have is theological and moral and some practical problems that Titus needs to clean up so that things are set straight again. Let me add here, anytime you assume a role of leadership in a church where there have been others before you, usually there were things that were left unaddressed. Your predecessor may have run out of energy, run out of time, run out of skill. He may have even run out of courage to address the things that were a mess. I remember in a former church, we had an anniversary celebration, and the former pastor came back to visit. We had a wonderful time together, and when we were all alone, he pulled his chair up close and put his hand on my arm, and he said, "Chuck, I want to apologize. I left this," and he named the problem a real mess. I said, "Don't let it bother you. I just plan to slash your tires before you leave." When you leave a problem, it only gets worse over time, especially if that problem, and usually it does, relates to people. There were things that needed to be set in order on Crete. Paul didn't have the time, and his predecessor, these who had come and established churches, weren't really qualified. Or if they were, they were partially qualified. So it was a real mess. And he leaves Titus to straighten them out. Now, when you do that sort of thing, you usually need help. Someone around you who will work with you, who will have the maturity and the qualities necessary to deal with difficult situations. And for that reason, he mentions the importance of appointing the right people. Please observe, they are called in verse 5, elders, and in verse 7, overseers. Again, pay attention to key words. I take it that these are one in the same office, just referring to various features of the role of a leader. You could also think in terms of the word pastor. Appoint elders and overseers and pastors, people who will be in spiritual leadership so that things can be set in order and you get back on the right track. The island's 160 miles long. We're not told how many churches. We're only told that there were cities on the island. Every city is mentioned in verse 5. And the apostle no doubt wants Titus to pay attention to the whole group of them. In case you wonder what kind of problems he would face, and we'll look at it more in depth next time, drop down to verse 10. There are many rebellious men, empty talkers, and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision. You're going to deal with rebellion, so you'll have the stubborn will to deal with. You're going to be dealing with gossips, people who talk too much, and you're going to be dealing with those who are deceptive, people who are one way in front of you and they're another way behind you. They're hypocrites. In case you wonder if Titus was just merely to become friends with them or do his best to chum up and make things a little better, notice the 11th verse. These are people who must be silenced. They are upsetting whole families, teaching things they should not teach for the sake of sordid gain. Why couldn't Titus do it all alone? Well, if you ask that, you've never tried to straighten out a mess. If you have tried, you know the value of having people in your corner. We would say today, having a strong board of individuals who work alongside you and with you in leading, people who stand there, take the pressure, handle the flack, face off the stubborn, silence the gossips, and deal with those calling a deceiver what he is. Let me add just a little thought that might not dawn on you. Titus is Greek. But these are people, end of verse 10, who are of the circumcision. So he's now dealing cross-culturally with people who have a different cultural background than his. He's Greek. He's a Gentile. He's dealing with Judaizers, legalists, who are Jewish. That exacerbates the challenge. It takes guts to deal with this. It takes right timing, wisdom. It takes determination, planning, the ability to stand firm for truth without being dissuaded or intimidated. It also takes grace. Sheep must be led, not assaulted. People must be dealt with carefully, not attacked. All of this means, Titus, you need people around you who can do this with you. You need, remember, qualified leaders. They are the ones able to lead the work of the church. If you have ever been involved in a church that has somehow gotten off course because of poor leadership or an unqualified individual who was taking it his own way, you don't need any further example. You may come from an abusive leader. Pastors can be that. Sometimes they began by simply being zealous and passionate and strong-hearted. And then as time passes, if there are not those around him who can help round some of those edges, you find yourself a victim of his assaults and demands and sometimes legalistic requirements. Whatever it may have been, Titus needed help, those who would come alongside him and lead and address these problems. Can I just add a little extra word for no extra charge? If you crave leadership, walk into your closet and get a pair of shoes and hit yourself real hard on the knees and on the shin till you bruise yourself a little bit. There is nothing to be envied in the role of the leader. Nothing. Oh, there are moments of reward, but they are that. More than not, it is hard work. It is lonely work. It is being misunderstood and maligned and criticized. Now, unless you think I'm taking on the Stonebriar Community Church today, you might think that if you don't know me. The pulpit is not where I fight those battles, and in this case, there's no battle to fight. This is the most delightful ministry I've ever been a part of. And part of the reason is we deal with problems when they arise. And I haven't had a predecessor who has preceded me in this role, so I'm making messes for my successor as I preach today. I hope not, but we all have blind spots. The point being, please, if you're to be thrust into leadership, God will find you. The right people will tap you on the shoulder. Don't feel the need to get an agent or to send out letters or to drop hints. You'll be found. You'll be used. Titus is to appoint them. There was not to be an election where popular opinion would win the vote, and the person who gets the majority would be placed into office. He was to appoint them. That doesn't fit with most denominational churches, or at least many denominational churches, and it may seem a strange way to put it because you were not raised with that. Be sure your theology is shaped by the scriptures, not by a former denomination or a former church or what mama taught you or what daddy said. What the scripture says is what guides us, and I read the word appoint literally. Now we're going to deal with the qualities that are necessary to be found in the life of one who takes on this lonely assignment, this very important responsibility of spiritual leadership. As I look over verses 6 through 9, I see three categories. First is the home and family, verse 6, how the leader lives his life behind the scenes with family. As the doors are closed and he's with his wife and he's with his children, that's important. The next part that's addressed, verses 7 and 8, has to do with his own inner qualities. Five of them are negative in verse 7. Six of them are positive, mentioned in verse 8. When you get to verse 9, he goes public, and we see the role of the leader in a public role at the church and beyond. So we move from the most private of areas, the home, to those areas that are still personal, the inner qualities of positives and negatives, and then we see the importance of that role as it works its way out in the lives of other people publicly. Let's go in that order. First, marriage and family, verse 6. Addressing the issue of appointing elders, he says, namely, or here are the things you look for. If any man is above reproach, let's pause there because that's mentioned again in verse 7. The overseer must be above reproach. The word means blameless, not sinless. We don't try to find sinless people. He left the earth in the first century. And we who continue on in the work of ministry are all flawed individuals. The word is not sinless. It is the word that really does mean without blame. The term means unaccused, unquestioned integrity. Calvin writes, marred by no disgrace. A qualified leader should offer no loophole for criticism. We have the word exemplary, and that would fit. Kent Hughes writes, not chargeable with some offense, not open to community accusation. This man is free of scandal. He doesn't have a bad track record. He does his work, whether it's in the business realm or other ministry realm, whatever, he is respected, and in that sense, he is without accusation. So he's called here above reproach. Now watch the two areas in verse 6. He is to be the husband of one wife. The Greek reads, one woman man. Obviously, it would be a man who is married once and living in harmony with this same woman he's been married to. And by the way, it is a reference to an adult male, not a female. This is a role to be filled by men, and in this case, a category of men who are married. I'm broad enough to believe it could include a widower married to a woman whom he has lost to death. Could very well be that he has married again. Now, some are rather pristine in their convictions and have no place in their theology for a man ever married more than once for whatever reason. It could include a man, perhaps, who has never married. However, all of that could be conjecture, and it's debated. I have about 14 volumes on the letter to Titus, and in those 14 volumes, I have about 11 opinions of how to handle one woman man. So you come to terms with it as you study it, and be careful that you stay with this text and correlated texts that relate to the same thing. For example, 1 Timothy chapter 3. Basically, there is a singularity of a man's faithfulness to a woman who is his wife. It implies sexual purity and a reputation for devotion to that woman. John Phillips writes a helpful word, marriages bring disciplines as well as delights. It is an arena where love and loyalty can be practiced, where lessons in personal relationships can be learned, where theories are tested in the crucible of experience, where limits have to be observed. A good husband is faithful to his wife, a good provider, a spiritual leader, loving his wife as Christ loved the church. Another man adds, many a wise pastor has advised potential leaders whose marriages need attention not to seek church office, despite the fact they are technically married. God requires the church to determine whether a potential elder's marriage is whole, healthy, and solid. As a corollary, men with damaged or deficient marriages should not pursue church leadership positions, thinking that others will not care or notice. They will care, and they will notice.
You're listening to the Bible teaching of pastor and author Chuck Swindoll. This week, we've embarked on a study in the book of Titus, and there's much more to discover. Chuck titled this series, Tough Grace in Difficult Places. As we conclude another week of Bible teaching, I want to draw your attention to two resources provided by Insight for Living. First, Chuck asked his creative team to assemble a Bible study workbook for our study of Titus called Tough Grace in Difficult Places. This resource is part of our Searching the Scriptures Bible studies. Through each of the 11 chapters, you can study the book of Titus alongside Chuck while jotting down your personal notes and reflections from the text and the message. To purchase a spiral-bound copy of this Bible study workbook, go to insight.org/workbooks. And then I want to remind you that Chuck wrote a commentary on 1 and 2 Timothy along with Titus that we're offering you right now. It pairs naturally with this study and combines Chuck's practical wisdom, warmth, and wit to help you understand and apply God's Word to your life. The book is titled Swindoll's Living Insights New Testament Commentary. In this book, Chuck draws on more than 50 years of ministry to help you know how to participate in a healthy ministry and protect yourself from spiritual erosion. These principles apply even if you're not a church leader. To purchase Chuck's commentary on 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus right now, just go online to insight.org/offer. Before we close today, I want to remind you that you can send a donation to support the ministry of Insight for Living by writing to us. Here's our address. It's Insight for Living, Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas 75034. You can also call us at 800-772-8888 or give a donation online by going to insight.org/donate. I'm Bill Meyer, inviting you to join us again when Chuck Swindoll continues his study in the book of Titus, Monday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Looking for a Few Good Men, was copyrighted in 2006, 2007, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.